Now, I'm delighted once more to welcome back an old friend of Phoenix FM's, John Debenham, who, along with his partner-in-arms, Andrew Summers, has been at it again in a dynamic duo who just published yet another title about the history of Essex. And this new book is called Battlefield Essex, but the title is a little bit of a misnomer, is it not, John?
Well, a misnomer maybe, but yeah, it's not a military reference book. It's rather a record of the trials and tribulations of the past 2,000 years on Essex soil, from bloody battles, social protests, to legal wrangles, many of them violent and deadly, but some that didn't involve the loss of life, but at the same time, we're very angry.
Now, indeed, from what I've seen, you've covered what I would call real conflicts, such as those involving Queen Boadicea and the Romans, notably in Colchester, the battles between the barons and King John after he reneged on the Magna Carta, the Peasants' Revolt, the English Civil War, and riots resulting from the Industrial Revolution and Enclosure Acts. But you've also looked in some detail at the seaside invasion of the Mods and Rock, the rise of the rise and fall of pirate radio, labour disputes, and of course the battle over the Dale Farm. And I think I'm right in saying that we've covered a number of these before. So perhaps before today we could look in detail at just a couple of these lesser known incidents. So could we start by going back to the days following the rout of the Romans and the arrival of the Anglo-Saxons?
Indeed. The Romans left, and then the Saxons came around 450 AD. Now, there must have been conflicts, as we know from the weapons found at Sutton Hoo or with the Saxon king Sebert's grave, excavated in Southend a few years back. However, records of Saxon battles are non-existent until the Vikings start to arrive, and their attacks and invasions began to be chronicled.
And just what are these?
Well, let's talk about Alfred the Great's time.
Yeah.
When England was divided on a line from East Anglia to the River Mersey, roughly. The Danes ruled the northern part and Alfred the southern, Wessex. And now in 892, the Vikings launched a major attack to conquer Alfred's Wessex, with 250 ships landing near Ashford in Kent, and a further 80, led by Hasten the Black, landing on the Isle of Sheppey. Now, Alfred, maybe fearing a pincer movement, attacked Hasten first, forcing him to flee Sheppey across the Thames to Benfleet, where a Danish settlement of shipwrights had been established for some years. Hasten set about fortifying this settlement to make it his base for raiding up and down the River Thames. And more Danes fleeing from Alfred's army arrived in Benfleet, and the last thing Alfred needed, so close to London, was a heavily fortified enemy. So his son Edward and son-in-law Æthelflæd raised an army in London and marched along forest tracks down to Hadley in Essex. They launched a surprise attack, storming the Danish fort and routing the unprepared Danes. Hasten, their leader, was away, but his wife and children were taken hostage. The fort was destroyed, the ships were burnt, and the survivors fled to the Danelaw settlement at Shrewsbury.
Do we know where the Viking vessels were actually anchored?
Well, we know, as far as archaeological surveys have suggested, that the probable site was on the Canby side of the railway bridge through to the drainage streams of Church Creek, which is behind St Mary's Church, and behind the Anchor Pub to the back of the Moorings Hall. It's the area from the railway bridge to the Helmet and Hoy pub that is likely site for the burning of the ships. As to Hasten's fort, it's thought likely to have been built within the confines of the car park near Benfleet Station, between School Lane and the High Street.
Now, I know there's a lot more about Viking activity in your book, including details of the battles of Maldon and Ashingdon. But as we're a little tight on time, I'd really like to turn the clock forward some considerable distance to the 1920s and the so-called War of Flags, which erupted in Sleepy Thaxted. What on earth was that all about?
Well, war might be taking it a bit too far, but certainly the incident is what became known as the Battle of the Flags.
Mm-hmm.
And it all revolves around the so-called Red Vicar of Thaxted, Conrad Le Dispenser Noel.
What's his name?
Conrad Le Dispenser Noel.
Oh, now, well, that's a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, he was a founder member of the Socialist Party, and he was sponsored for the living at Thaxted by the Countess of Warwick, Daisy Greville, of Eastern Lodge, herself something of a socialist rebel. And he certainly livened the place up when he arrived. He immediately ended the practice of wealthy parishioners having reserved seats in the church, which meant that poor people could be excluded if the service was crowded.
But of course, some of those people, those wealthy people, may well have been involved in building the church, were they not?
It may well be, but yeah. Conrad was a great believer in equality of everybody,
right.
And he wasn't having anybody saying pulling rank, so not in his services.
Yes,
but. It was what caused the problem, really, was his Irish and socialist sympathies that proved most controversial. Because shortly after the 1916 Easter Risings in Dublin, which was a hot topic at the time, he was given a Sinn Féin Irish nationalist flag by one of his parishioners, an Irish lady. And he set this up beside the English St. George's flag in the church. And soon after that, he added a red flag, the emblem of the socialism. And he had also set up a chapel in honour of John Ball, the priest and martyr prominent in the peasant revolt of 1381. These actions went largely unnoticed until he moved the flags to a prominent position early in 1921. And at that time, the Irish insurrection had become very bloody. A visiting student from Cambridge inquired why there wasn't a Union flag, to which Noel responded that in his opinion the Union flag was imperialist and impressive.
I would have thought these days more likely that the students would have been supporting him.
Well, yeah, that may well be, but at that time obviously the nationalist fervour was on the increase.
Indeed.
And the Cambridge students, for a start, took great exception to this. And it got so hectic that mobs of up to 3,000 descended upon Thaxted on at least five occasions, intent on removing the flags and banners. I mean, on the 21st of April 1921, hundreds of students arrived from Cambridge. Forcing their way into the church, they tore down the offending flags, which Noel simply replaced. There were numerous disturbances in the street, with running fist fights and even reported gunshots. The questions were asked in Parliament, and eventually the church consistory court adjudged that the flags were illegal under ecclesiastical law.
So, as I say, these days I suspect he probably got a lot of backing from the official opposition as well as the students of the day, but there you are, it was a different time then. Now, I'm really sorry to say, but of course we have run out of time, and we haven't even touched on a fraction of the subjects covered in this new book. All I can say is that it has to be one of the most fascinating reads that I've had the pleasure of enjoying for many a long year. And if you're in any way interested in history, especially as it affects our county, this really has got to be a must read for you. So come on, John, you've got to remind us of the title, where it's available, and of course the price.
It's called Battlefield Essex, and it's available from all bookshops, and book wholesalers, or direct from the publisher, or online at www.essex100.com, and it's priced at just £88.99.
Good stuff. Thank you very much indeed for that, and we'll put all of that up on the website. Thanks.